Today's perek in Tanakh is perek Yud Zayin in Sefer Yehoshua, 17th perek. And so we've just discussed the beginning of the Nachal of the 2.5 Shvatim that was part of the Seder, and we spoke about the Yehuda's Nachla, and we spoke about Ephraim's Nachla, which begins on the southern part of the area that was Meyuchad for both Bnei Yosef. And now, going up, we discover where the boundaries are of Mati Menashe towards the north. So, Vayiagoral Mate Menashe, Kihu Bechor Yosef, starting with the Mate Menashe that was actually on the other side of the Yarden, that was Machir, the Machir Bechor Menashe, Avia Gilad, Kihu Aya Ish Milchama, Vayilo Agilad Vabashan. So, as we saw in the Chumash, Machir Menashe was very, very active. He went ahead and he had his own private army basically to take over the entire area. So, that this is a man that was a very powerful man, and he was an Ish Milchama taking over the Gilad and the Bashan. But there were a lot of other families besides Machir. And Vayi Livnei Menashe HaNotarim L'Mishpachotam, there were the following families that were still left. There was Livnei Aviezer, there was Livnei Chelek, V'Livnei Asriel, V'Livnei Shechem, V'Livnei Chefer, V'Livnei Shemida, Ela B'nei Menashe Ben Yosef HaZecharim L'Mishpachotam. Now, we're talking about the males. We're going to have to deal with the females in a moment, but the males are what we just listed. So the reason that Machir took Bimei Moshe, and we didn't give it to Ephraim, was because Menashe is the Bechor. And besides which, he's also an Ish Milchama, and therefore was willing to stand on the Gvul to take over the area that would be the area that was a Shmira on Eretz Yisrael. We know that the Kananim were terrified when their Shmira fell, which was Sichon and Og, and now he was taking over that area, and so the Gilad and the Bashan needed to go to a very powerful man, and this would be Machir. So first of all, he's the Bechor, and also was willing to take the risks of being in that area. That's the way that basically Rashi understands it. The way that the Mitzitis understands it is that although he was the Bechor, nonetheless, he waited until Menashe, Ephraim, completed the Yerusha, which is, it's the other families that really needed to wait, but we're talking about that even though Menashe was Bechor Yosef, not referring to Machir. We're going to discuss now the Nachal of Ephraim first, as we did. So in other words, we're not going to use the excuse that, well, but they already had some. They got on the other side of the Yarden. You still would have thought that the Bechor would come first. Nonetheless, Yaakov Avinu was Makdim, therefore, this is the way that we had to give out the Goral also. Yesterday we spoke about Ephraim, and today we're going to speak about Menashe. Now, that was the Zecharim, but remember there was another problem over here. And that brings us all the way back to Parshas Pinchas, where Tzlovchad's daughters come and they approach in the Midbar the same people that they approach here. And it's Yehuda in front of Elazar Kohen, and right there they're in front of the Oyel Mayed. And here we review what happened. V'li Tzlovchad ben Chefer ben Gilad ben Machir ben Menashe. Okay, now we're all the way back now, and we see what happened over here. This Tzlovchad had died, and lo hayu lo banim ki im banot, ve'ele shmot benotav, machlav no'a chogla milka v'tirza. Now, as we saw in the Chumash, these were women that were very, very mechavavot Eretz Yisrael, and that they insisted that the din of Nachala being, according to the Batei Avot, is only where there are banim. But if there are no banim and there are banot, and they should inherit, therefore, the chelek of their father Tzlovchad, who also was from the Yotzei Mitzrayim, why don't they get part of the action? So vatikravna lifnei Elazar Kohen again, v'lifnei Yehoshua bin Nun, v'lifnei Anisim lemor. You may remember that while we were in the Midbar, Adonai tzivat Moshe latet lanu nachala betoch achenu. And indeed, vayitein lehem al pi Adonai nachala betoch achei avihem. And so, based on Moshe Rabbeinu's psak, when he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu what to do, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, kein benot zlofchot dovrot, they're 100% right. Therefore, we reviewed this to define the nature of nachalat abanot in Eretz Yisrael. Now, interestingly enough, the words over there in Bamidbar was Naton Titein Lahem. And there's a medrash that says that the double lashon of Natan Titain is that you should give them on both sides of the Yarden. So that means that they had actually already taken before. Shenotlu be'ever ha'yarden, which is not the mashmot of the pashtus here. And it's mashmot here, they're just coming now for the first time. And indeed later on we reiterate that it was mochir that was on the other side. We don't hear about them. But the medrash says then the double lashon of Natan Titain is the explanation for their tviyah here. Despite the fact that we were given, they were b'daikot. It's just not on Titain. So therefore we're supposed to get the portion over here as well. So sure enough, what did they do? Vayiplu chavlei menashe asara. Levad mi'atzagilad v'abashan Hashem mi'eva liyardim. There needed to be now 10 different chavalim. Chavalim is a different lashon for nachala. That's the nafluli. Chavalim nafluli bani imim af nachala shafraila nachala and chavala are interrelated. That's because bepashtus the way to make the nachala is by using a surveyor's rope, which is a chevel. So then it came to be the same way that the goral became the goral, the lot became a lot of land, the chevel became the chevel of territory. Right? So it's all interrelated, as we spoke about yesterday.
Right, the word
on. Some of us heard.
Yes. So here, kibenot menashe nachalu nachala betoch banav ve'eretz hagilad hayta livnei menashe notarim. Now we needed, according to that medrash, what it would be saying is that even though eretz hagilad is not being discussed over here, that went to bnei menashe. You would have thought that that would have gotten rid of the benot menashe, but it didn't, because benot menashe were also nachalu nachala betoch these banim, and therefore we needed to have, because of this, 10 chalakim. Now, why did we need to have 10 chalakim? Being as this was not primal chalakim, Slavchad wasn't one of the... These are the daughters. He was dead, so these are the daughters. We certainly don't list the chevel of every individual. So why in the world would we list 10 chavalim? So the Gemara that we're going to have later on in Baba Basra, which is also Sifri, explains like this. 6 chalakim were the mishpachot that we just listed at the beginning. Aviezer, Chelek, Asriel, Shechem, Chefer, and Shemida. Shemida, by the way, probably is the name Shemida. Know my name. Shemida. It sounds like this weird name, right? But it's actually a beautiful name. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, know my name. Shemida. Right? So, but anyway, so that was 6. Now, the Benot Slavchad, what they had was like this. They had one chelek, which was Slavchad's chelek. Certainly we don't give separate chalok to the heirs. So that's Benot Slavchad, he was Yotzi Mitzrayim. But Chefer was alive at Yetzias Mitzrayim. So Chefer got his own chelek, as Rashi explains in Chumash, besides Slavchad. But they were also heirs to Slavchad's piece of Chefer. So Memela, it includes that piece of the land. Plus, there was a brother that had died, which the other Achim, who didn't have any children, not male or female, which the other Achim split, which means that Slavchad split. And therefore they had to get that chelek. Plus, he was a Bechor. So they got the additional chelek of the Bechorah. So that means, why is it necessary for Yehoshua to do this in this fashion? Because what was being done here, says the Gemara, was a kviut of Dinei Yerusha. And therefore they needed to make a big fuss about this. First of all was the Yerusha, the fact that the Yerusha of the Banais takes place. But a much more technical issue is, why did they have a right to a chelek Bechora if Eina Bechor notel b'ra'ui kebimuchzak? Since the Bechor here had died, he never was zocha in this territory. So how does he... Where does he ever get now that chelek abechora? So from the year, the Gemara's kaveh, you see from the year, the gabay all dinim, that Eretz Yisrael has a dinim muksak, not roi. So it's as if we were already muksak, which lamaisa relates to the Gemara that we didn't read today, which is, it's tomorrow's daf, that Avram Avinu, in walking through Eretz Yisrael, created a chazaka on the whole place. So that's the Kumi Saleh Bar, it's Lorka Lorokhba. To say, if you go through in a cell, if you go through the territory, so then that's your chazak on it. Okay. But in any event, so this is why we're making such a fuss here, because The same reason we made a fuss about the idea of Goro with Achan, to define Yerusha B'ya Goro, here we also need to make certain that the dinim of the Yerusha are clear. Okay, so this is who it was that was Yorish. Now, as far as what they were Yorish, we have not yet spoken about the Gvul of Manasseh. We know that the Gvul of Ephraim ended at the area of the Michmetat, if you recall. The Michmetat below Shechem. So that, if you take a look on your maps, which I hope you've downloaded, the Michmetat area, the Michmetat area is directly below Shechem, and that was the area that we spoke about until now as being up to the Michmetat was the Chelek of Ephraim, and now we want to get to the Chelek of Menashe. So we have to start now from the Michmetat. And so we had now Vayiglu Menashe make Asher HaMichmetat. Now, Asher, it's not clear exactly what that's supposed to mean. If it's Asher, the Shevet, or it's an actual particular place that's called Asher. If you take a look at the Gvulais, Chelek Asher is indeed at the western boundary of Menashe on top. So that we'll see later on, the boundary gets to Asher. But certainly the area of Michmetat, which is the southern boundary, is as far from the Shevet Asher as you can get. So even though we talk about Asher later on, there it surely seems to me Asher as the actual Shevet. Yeah, that's why many say there must have been a city that was called Asher that we don't know about. It doesn't make sense over here, because later on it gets up to Asher. So this is Shevet. Michmetat Asher Pnei Shechem. So as we saw before, there's that area that's called Tapuach. There's the town of Tapuach. From Michmetat, Yamin, by the way, always means south. Because remember, the direction that you face in a Tanakh map is always east. Because the earth is revolving eastward. So obviously that's Kedem. It's a little bit silly to have maps facing west. In other words, the natural position, if the entire planet is moving east, it's a little bit silly to have a map that's going somewhere else. You have the panim of the planet is to the east, right? In which case, it makes sense that the map should be facing east, not north, which is totally arbitrary. Right? The north takes nothing into consideration about the nature of the planet that you're on. A map... You're just used to it. Straight ahead is east.
They followed the north stars. The maps that became because they always followed the north star. So that was really
the nautical maps. Okay, but it says a natural map. Yeah. But that's a later development. All early maps go face to the east. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no such thing as a map to the north. Okay, so over here, Yamin. If you're facing east, the south. So for the south, it's called Yamin. So in this case,
Rashi explains that you mean based on Tikkun Pei Tes Yud Gimel, with the directions that you mean this man of the south, because his Nachla was further south.
So now the Gvul turns right, meaning goes south, to the area of Yoshvei Ein Tapuach, which means an area is a Yoshvei Ein Tapuach, unless it's not a particular city, but it's the area where people live around Ein Tapuach. Now, Limnashe Haita Eretz Tapuach. Apparently the city of Tapuach was quite important, so that the entire land around it was ruled by Tapuach, and Menashe owned that area, but the city of Tapuach itself, Tapuach Agvul Menashe Lifnei Ephraim, the problem over here was that Tapuach was actually belonged in the Eretz of Ephraim, so it was one of the Arim that were Nivdalot that we spoke about, the island cities that were in the other Nachala. Then Viarad Agvul Nachal Kona, and so the Gvul at that point followed the Nachal. Kfar Kona is there, is that right?
Yeah, today we know.
Today we know exactly. Here is the Nachal Kona. It's not marked for some reason on that other map. But this is Nachal Kona, as you can see, coming around from the Tapuach area. Where is it? You don't have it? You have Nachal Kona? Okay, there we go.
Shem
Shomron
to the Karnei Shalom, if any of you know Karnei Shalom, is right on Nachal Kaneh.
Really?
Yeah. It goes right beneath.
Nachal Kaneh is marked on the roots when you cross it. So it got, it followed Nachal Kaneh. So again, Menashe also was entirely water defined.
What?
The Yarden on one side, Nachal Kaneh on the other side, and the Yam itself, as we'll see, on the other side. So the Gvul went down along Nachal Kaneh, Negba LeNachal. It went now to the south of that Nachal. All of those cities which are known, we're not telling you what they are though, just like we didn't mention them before. Arim ha'ela le'Ephraim betoch Arim Menashe. Those cities were also belonged to Ephraim as island cities, and inside the area of Menashe. Ugvu Menashe mitzvon la'Nachal v'itotzotav ha'yama. So the actual, even though the to the south, we you would think that it wouldn't belong to Ephraim, but the Gvul of Menashe entirely went along the north. That was the main Gvul, even though the other areas of these cities was also taken by them to the south. Negba le'Ephraim. So basically, to sum it up, to the south, we're talking about the area that belonged to Ephraim, to the Tzafon, that area belonged to Menashe, v'yi hayam givulo, and then it touched the sea. As far as the north is concerned, there it hit Shevet Asher, uba Asher yifgun mitzafon. So on the north side, along the Yam, towards the west, it was Asher, and towards the east, it was Pogea in the area of Yisachar. Yisachar also now came along and hit the Yarden. So even though we don't have the exact Gvulais, but you can still... Yes, let's see if we have a map. Yeah. So here, if you take a look at this map, you have the area of Yisachar here, south of the Kinneret, Asher here, Haifa area, and this area is Menashe, so it borders Yisachar on the east, and it borders northeast, borders Menashe, it borders Asher on the northwest, which is the village that have been given to us here. But by Yila Menashe, by Yisachar, by Asher, Menashe got all the way up to the Tchum of Menashe and Asher, up to the borders now, and including these cities, Beit Shan uvnoteha. The words be doesn't necessarily have to mean inside that area, because we have places along, let's say, so that you can talk about Yisroel Chonim ba'ayin, which doesn't mean they're inside of the ayin, obviously. It means liyad ha'ayin. So here too, it means that they came all the way up. The Nachal of Menashe came all the way up to the cities that we're talking about over here, and these cities were Beit Shan uvnoteha. So that's a, that is now right at the edge of Nachlat Yisachar, which is now at the corner, the northeastern corner of Menashe. Beit Shan, of course, is an extremely important city. It's just been excavated so that we have all the beautiful Roman theaters and so on in Beit Shan, but it's also a much older city.
Tel
Beit Shan, and that was a city that the Mitzrayim had when the Mitzrayim was in control of the world. They also had a large city in Beit Shan. So that was the area up at the edge of Yisachar. And there was also, besides Beit Shan, there was also Yivla'am of Notea, that Yoshvei Dor. We saw that Dor was a wide area that we called Nafat Dor, which is a city along the seacoast where we do the Treles. All the Treles remains are found in Dor today. The Yoshvei Eindor of Notea. Chofdor, yes, exactly. That's Nafat Dor.
Yeah.
That could be our next trip that we do every day. Let's go. That's a beautiful place. The Yoshrei Eindor, so that means, again, if it's Yoshrei, it means this whole area of Notea, plus the surrounding suburbs.
Eindor brings us back, right?
It's not going in. It's talking about the cities from the most partial going down. Uvnotea. These are the cities that are along the border areas of Yisachar and Asher. Yeah. And Yoshvei Megiddo Uvnotea, and that's Shloshet Anafot. So in other words, we have over here three separate areas or counties that are included over here. Possibly the cities that we just spoke about, maybe. Eindor, Tanakh, Megiddo. which may have been once upon a time a political entity in the time of Canaan. But in any event, it was divided into three governmental areas, and it was never conquered. V'lo yochlu b'nei Menashe lahorishat ha'arim ha'ele v'yol ha'Kanani l'shevet be'eretz hazot. So we have once again, just as we had before, this is the third time that we've seen this, basically. So we had this problem with Ephraim, pockets of the enemy. We have the problem with Menashe. We have the problem with Yehuda. But vayiki chasku b'nei Yisrael v'yitnu at ha'Kanani lamas v'horesh lahorishon. This is a fascinating thing. You notice that before it says v'lo yochlu b'nei Menashe lahorish. And here it says, Vayiki chasku b'nei Yisrael. So that seems to imply a very important thing, that even though what we've been talking about is a changeover from the national army into the army of the Shvatim, and that means that the army of each Shevet is responsible for its own territory, which now becomes, at this moment, it becomes the important issue that's going to actually be brought to court, as we'll see. But the Pasuk introduces that by pointing out that there was indeed a national army, but that national army was used for national goals, not for the Horasha. The Horasha was the Shevet's responsibility. The national army indeed insisted on these people taking on being a mas for Yisrael. They're subjugated. So you'll say, if you could subjugate them, why not just wipe them out? That's the business of Menashe. That's not our business. So there's two separate issues.
That's interesting.
It's fascinating. This is the only place where we see that implied.
But that the nation wouldn't take responsibility.
Yeah, because it's exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yehoshua. It's time now for each Sheva to do their own job, and that's because it's time for you to die. So the two are really interrelated, being as there's no national government. So there's also, we're moving into the time of the Shoftim right after this. No national government, but there's still B'nai Yisrael. And when that happened, although that happens later on, they were never Morish them.
So one of the points that archaeologists always point out is that for this period, it was hundreds of years until there was a national, right? That's the problem, one of the problems you had with your dig, right? How could it be such an enormous city was fortified built this time when there's
supposedly,
no...
Supposedly, right. Right.
So each one was developing at a different pace.
Right. And now, if we see it this way, then the actual story that now appears, it becomes understandable, because it's an actual continuation of this difference between a national goal and a Shevet's goal. So here what happened is that the B'nai Yosef, together, not one of the Shvatim, Ephraim and Menashe together, claimed that they had been cheated in the Nachal. And the reason for this is very simple. There's only one Shevet that increases dramatically between the senses of post-Mitzrayim and pre-Knis al-Aretz. And that was indeed this Shevet, Shevet Yosef. So we end up over here with a Menashe being 25,000 people more, which is connected, Ko-Yezar-Echa, says the man. That's Ko is 25. 25,000 people more than they were before. But the problem is that Yerushas Aretz went according to Yotzei Mitzrayim. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they claimed that they were getting half of a Nachla, basically.
They got a huge piece of it.
But they said it didn't take into consideration, because a lot of the area, as we'll see, is not usable. It's very mountainous. It's covered with forests. What are we supposed to do with it? It's on. Well, we didn't get to Shimon yet. Vayedabru b'nei Yosef et Yehoshua lemor. Madu anatata li nachala gorel echad v'chevel echad v'ani amrav ad asher at ko, which is the remez to the ko yezarecha, at ko, I'm an additional 25,000 people, asher at ko berachani Adonai. So this is the brocha. That brocha that was given to Aaron, to Avram Avinu, was mitkayim in me, ko yezarecha. So now, this was an attempt to come to the nation to help out with a Shevet. And Yehoshua's response was to put it squarely back in their hands. Vayomer aleihem Yehoshua. Well, that's fascinating. So you're an Amrav, are you?
There's no nepotism, because he's from...
That's right. That's right. You are an Amrav. Exactly. I thought that was a good thing. Im Amrav ata. So go ahead. Alelecha Yara. I mean, your problem is what? You don't have where to live? Do you realize how much territory you got? So what's your problem? It's mountainous territory. Turn it into farmland. Uvereta lecha Hashem, be'eretz ha'priziv ha'refa'im. Are you scared? Go up into the land of the Prizi and the Rephaim. Ki atzlecha ha'refraim. You feel sort of pressured by the little area. Ha'refraim, where you are? Is that a problem? Vayomer v'nei Yosef, well, sure it's a problem. Lo yimatzei lo no'ahar. There's not enough territory in the har. And down there in their valleys, there's scary people. And there's Rechav Barzel. Don't forget those tanks that we talked about before in that war when they came out to attack after the Gibeon Maisa. So there's Rechav Barzel. And Lasha be'emek Yisrael. And you're thinking we have it so much fun? Those areas are tough to conquer. You know, let's close the issue right now. Am Ravata, we've now decided. You're a lot of people. A lot of people means not only you got a lot of farmers. I mean, you could cut down those trees, you could turn it into farmland. But you're also strong people. Believe me, you're not going to have any limitations of a tiny goral. Ki hari yelach. Ki yar, you're complaining. Everything that you complained about is the solution, not the problem. Okay? You've got a har. What do you mean the har is no good? Ki yarhu, exactly. Uvereto. And then vayalacha totzotah, you have all of the areas and all of the implications of that, you see, because once you're chelesh on the har, you're over the knani. And once you're over the knani, ki torisheta knani. Yeah, those knanis ki rechav barzel. I know. It's really tough, isn't it? Ki chazaku. They're tough people. But, now this is a very strange medrash, in which he's even more sarcastic. It's adorable. In which he tells them, gosh, you've got so many people. Alelecha hayara. I mean, aren't you worried about an ayin hara? You should go hide in the trees so that nobody will see you. So they said, but what do you mean? We're from Zera Yosef. Zera Yosef, ayin hara is in Shalit. Oh, he says, exactly. Isn't that it? So why don't you get to work acting like Zera Yosef? The reason that Ayin is Aras and Shaletet by him is because he has the guts to do what he has to do and never to look at anything that isn't his. So Ayin Shalerot Stalehanot, if you're Zera Yosef, get to work on your Chelek. So this becomes our introduction, that first little part. Don't come back to us. The whole idea of our doing now the 7 years of Nachala was to allow each Shevet to grow up and to become itself, and in the process of its own maturation, to be zochet to its own chelek. And this, of course, is Bichlal, very much a theme in Eretz Yisrael, that the shaychus of not only of a Shevet, even of an individual, to their Nachala in Eretz Yisrael, is the sherish of their neshama, is the extent at which they themselves have reached a level that is shaykh to geula, shaykh to personal maturity, personal geula. And therefore, the reason that we're not Zeicha to Eretz Yisrael always is because of the fact that we don't really feel that it's ours. There hasn't been that development as an Am that allows us to relate to something as if it truly is meant to be ours. And therefore, it is very important right here at the beginning of the Nachla for Yehoshua to define this straight out. You're coming to complain, I laugh at you. The whole thing is very sarcastic. That closing pasuk is absolutely hilarious. Yep. And yep again, key this and key that and key this and key that. That's wonderful. I think that's exactly the solution. Go right ahead. And so this was the ultimate dismissal of a case.
Just to review, here's Shechem in the middle, and the line of Nachal Kenneh going out west, cutting across. Ephraim is to the south, which is, since we're facing east, it's to the right. Manasseh is to the left. And I call it the Manasseh Belt because you have Beit Shan all the way in the far east, close to the Yarden, and then Ein Dor further closer to Har Tavor moving west, and we're passing the valley of Beit Shan, and then we pass the valley of Yisrael where the chariots were.
Did I mention here the Gilboa because of what's going to be coming?
Okay, the Gilboa lies
on a beautiful mountainous area that he's talking about.
So the Gilboa lies in between Beit Shan and Yisrael. It's part of the Battle of Shaul we're going to have later, and a little bit to the south of Har Gilboa and Emek Yisrael is Yivlaim and Tanakh. Tanakh is just inside the Palestinian Authority. It's not
accessible with, you know, it's the area of the Tanachim, and then comes Megiddo, and so you're carving a line basically around the west part of Emek Yisrael, just inside the mountains, and these cities, Yivleim, Tanach, Megiddo, are guarding the passageways to be able to get through the mountains and out to the sea. Yokneam is next, but it's not part of their chelik, apparently.
You mentioned the exit. It's the Yokneam exit on Kishesh.
Nachal Tuz. Of Ramat Menashe. The south part of what most people just call the Carmel is one big block, is called Ramot Menashe, the hills of Menashe, above the valley up on top.
Wadi Milik. Roadway from Krishivin, right? But you can easily see why if you're up on Har Gilboa, you don't have to worry about people in the ending. It's absolutely incredible cover shot. You see everything.
There's three. You have the Gilboa, Givat Moreh, and Tabor, three major Tanakh hills, like one after the other, all in that area.
I never did an introductory shiur on that. Just the reason why, I guess, like, for example,